Dear Plugged In. You in on this? Toyota's versatile SUVs roll up their sleeves and take on tough jobs, dress up for a night out, or haul your family and friends with their spacious interiors. And they're available with some real sweet tech. Want a hybrid SUV? Oh yeah, they got those too. All with a slew of standard features so you won't break the bank. Get the juice at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Linus Olmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between, and we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
Welcome in to the DNVR Avalanche podcast, live from, well, half of us at the DNVR bar, as well as AJ joining me, Rudo and Allie running behind, as well as much of the DNVR crew here watching two crucial games. One, obviously, the Denver Nuggets playing right now against the Portland Trail Blazers. You hear any noise, that's likely those guys cheering, but also more related to the Avs, the Vegas Golden Knights playing the St. Louis Blues, currently up 5-4. Go team, not overtime in that one. As long as Vegas does not lose in overtime, the Avs are guaranteed a top two seed in that game. But we figured in this little lull in the Avs schedule a little bit before the playoffs start in proper, we would get to your playoff questions. This episode is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, the number one rated sportsbook app out there. And AJ, I have a question of my own first. Are okay. The Avs the favorite in the NHL to win the Stanley Cup right now?
I don't know about in the NHL. Certainly out of the West, yes.
Honestly, I don't even think it's that close in the West. I think the Avs are pretty clear cut.
Let's be real. Vegas had a handful with Dallas. That required a lot in that game. The Avs played their A game against Dallas, and it wasn't even close.
Blew them out, basically.
Yeah, and they played a B game against the Blues,
and they won.
And it was like, that's a tight game, but 6-4.
Boom! Vegas doing it for it.
Yeah. So that I think the Avs are certainly the favorite out West. With the way Tampa Bay looks, I don't want to say that they're the favorite in the NHL.
Tampa,
but it certainly looks like what we thought was gonna be true was that the really skilled teams that like to get out and play fast and really, really do play high skill games were gonna be the ones who came out of the gate the quickest. The two highest skilled teams in the league are arguably Tampa Bay and Colorado. And yeah, they look the best. They look head and shoulders above everybody else right now.
The only other team you really had in that mix was Boston, and they've looked terrible.
Well, and the reason I picked Philly to come out second in the Eastern round robin was because they're that kind of club. They're that kind of high skill club that wants to play a certain way. And they have the talent to do it, and we're seeing that. So, you know, I'm of the opinion that those are the three best teams in the NHL right now: Tampa Bay, Philadelphia, and Colorado.
I would find it hard to argue with you. I think you could probably make a conversation for Vegas in fourth even, but
yeah, because both Boston and Washington don't look very good at all. And then Nobody out West looks good.
Yeah.
Beyond those teams.
The Western teams that aren't in the round robin have been brutal, man. It has not been pretty hockey.
Like Chicago, Edmonton has been entertaining because it's the Wild West.
Yep.
There's no semblance of structure. Goals galore. Anything could happen on any given shift, but otherwise the West kind of sucks.
Yeah. And That's not to say that doesn't have its own entertainment value, but if you're looking strictly from quality hockey, not so much.
Right. Good hockey and entertaining hockey are not necessarily the same thing.
Exactly. All right. So we took a bunch of Twitter questions as well. Feel free to throw up your questions in the live chat if you have any. Hopefully we see them.
Please don't throw up.
I mean, I would agree.
Send us your questions. Just do it without the vomiting aspect of it.
I'm not sure if the live comments are working exactly, but if I do see them, I will shout them out and we'll get them asked. But AJ, I believe you have the Twitter questions here. We can start there.
Yeah, first question that we have for today is from Joey B. He says, what stat do you guys think is more important, total goals or game-winning goals?
Total
goals. This is not the first time that this has been asked by him, so I wanted to make sure that we at least touched upon this one.
100% total goals. At the end of the day, you only get a game-winning goal because of all the goals that got you into position to score the game.
Right. Like, we think of game-winning goals as like the Kadri goal.
Yep.
Like a goal that straight up wins a game. But we think of a game-winning goal as an overtime winner.
That's not how that stat's counted.
Exactly.
Every single game-winning goal.
A great example to me about why game-winning goals is kind of a blah stat that I don't necessarily put a whole lot into is, one, you think about the Makar's first game.
Yep.
They win that game 6-2. It was the third goal. It was 3-0. It became the game-winning goal because of how many that ended up being given up by the Avs that day.
And arguably the weakest goal of the game as well.
and the other one that really came to mind was the Avs and Islanders in Denver this year. Yeah. The Avs were up 3-0. They were in total control of that game. It wasn't particularly competitive. The Islanders scored one goal with like 3 minutes to go, and Burakovsky gets the game-winning goal.
The Washington game as well, where they made it close in the third period, but it didn't really matter. The Avs were
right.
Incomplete. The fifth goal of the game. Yeah.
The fifth of their sixth goals was the game-winning goal, and it was like that was a game they led by multiple goals the entire time.
Right. And it's like if that was a 3-2 game going into the third period, it looks completely different. So
yeah. So that's definitely total goals. Game-winning goals is not, you know, like things like overtime game winners, a very specific one like that. Hey, that's important. If a guy has a handful of those, there might be something there. You know, Joe Sakic famously
factor, yeah, a little
right. Bit. You know, and Joe Sakic famously led. That's his like career stat, the record that he owns.
Yep.
Is the most playoff overtime winners. And it's like, look, like you don't fall into those. One, you got to be in the playoffs a lot, but two, to have eight of those things, nine of those things, it's like you gotta be pretty good at this.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You don't get a lot of game winners without scoring a lot straight up. So
yeah.
I think one informs the other a little bit, and yeah, you know what? You're gonna pick up some empty netters. You're gonna go through that, and it's something I think that's worth looking into at the end of the season, where you say, oh wow, you know, this guy had six empty net goals or something out of the norm, and you're like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
But the same goes for game winners. It
yeah.
They're more about outliers than they are about consistent play.
Right. I mean, you look at McKinnon 2 years ago, I think he had 11 or 12 game winning goals, led the league.
Yep.
And then followed it up with, you know, another couple 40 goal seasons, and it's like he might have had 11 in the last 2 years combined. Right. Doesn't make him any like less clutch or whatever. It's just sort of a random stat. So anyway, he's asked us that a couple of times before, so I wanted to make sure that we
got him in there.
Yeah, got him in. Next question from Eddie says, would you rather Chicago finish off Edmonton and move on so the Avs can potentially play them in the first round, but Edmonton gets the first overall pick? Or Edmonton comes back and wins, and the Avs will have to face them later in the playoffs.
I haven't actually looked at. Did Vancouver beat Minnesota today?
Yes, 3-0.
Okay. So if all of the series leaders in the West finish off their series, there's a 37.5% chance that Lafreniere finishes in the Central. So Edmonton finishing off Chicago and getting Lafreniere means Laffy doesn't go to the Central. I will take that 100% of the time.
But he still stays out west, and he goes to a place where there are already insane forwards for him to join.
I don't care. I do not
care.
They can have Laffy for 3 years and then not be able to afford him alongside McDavid. That's fine.
I mean, the real question is will McDavid stay?
That right. They
for the for
I third don't think contract. They're having both. I'll put it that way.
So I don't know, but I'm just okay. I would rather just have him not out west. And to be honest with you, I have no issues with the Avs. After having watched this series, I have no issues with Colorado playing Edmonton.
To be honest, I don't have much issue with them playing either team. I think they beat Chicago easily. I think Edmonton maybe is more of a series, but especially after the defense the Avs showed against Dallas, nothing's going to come cheap for McDavid and Draisaitl.
Yeah, so definitely. Yeah, if Gerard and EJ are going to play the way that they did.
Yeah, absolutely. That team, Edmonton, has one line, maybe two lines when they split up Draisaitl and McDavid.
Yeah. But I mean, there are some, like, they're like Yamamoto, RNH, like, there are some nice players still in that forward core.
But it gets top six-ish, yeah.
It gets real shallow in a really big hurry, especially now that Ennis appears to have a serious leg injury and is done.
Yeah.
That was a guy that was important to them. So it's 6-4 final, by the way.
They've made it to the final. All right. So officially, yeah. Avs guaranteed a top two seed. That limits them to playing either Chicago, Arizona,
yeah,
Calgary, Winnipeg, Vancouver, or Minnesota.
Yeah, so it limits them to six teams. So
it eliminates
Nashville. We don't know anything yet. Yeah.
No Nashville, no Edmonton is the only thing guaranteed.
Yeah, so we'll see. But it's funny, no Nashville, no Edmonton. Both of those teams are facing elimination tomorrow.
Have not been playing very well.
Yeah. Okay, let's this is a really interesting question that I actually spent some time digging into today. From DNFTO, more valuable, Namestnikov or Nichushkin?
Man, that is a hard question to answer.
Kind of a brutal question.
So, all right, first of all, we need to establish value because Nichushkin is significantly cheaper and he's an RFA. If we're going strictly off of that,
also value, younger.
Also younger. If we're talking about future value to the Avalanche, I think it has to be Nichushkin because you're going to be able to re-sign that guy on a relatively affordable contract to whatever term you want. As far as he's an RFA. He has to sign with you. He cannot test the market. I know his defense is great. I know you could honestly make an argument for the Selke, at least in the defensive part of his game.
Mm-hmm.
But Vlad Namestnikov has been a revelation to this team. He can play anywhere in this lineup and has produced consistently. Yes, it's a small sample size, but you guys saw him against Dallas the other day. That dude is a machine that just fits like a cog into the Avs perfectly.
This will not be the last time we talk about Namestnikov on the show, so I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this question, but I do. It is a fascinating question because with Nichushkin, the defense is elite.
Yep.
The question is if that defense goes from being elite to just above average, which is where Namestnikov's defense has been for his career. It was not there this year, but I also would say him playing top 6 minutes on a super overmatched Ottawa team all season.
Yep.
Might have had something to do with that.
And Namestnikov's offense is more consistent. It just is.
Right. He's over his career, he's been a much more productive offensive player than Nichushkin ever has been. And we've seen they both are in top six roles in the game against Dallas, and which one produced?
Namestnikov, baby.
And the thing is that we've seen him in Colorado, in his time in Colorado. He spent most of his time in the top six, and he's produced.
Yep.
And with Nichushkin, you also, like, look, the defense has been great, and you're fine. You're totally fine. If that guy produces one every three or four games and continues to play insane defense for you in as the sixth forward in your top six, you will take that, okay? Let me just say that right now. That is okay. But yeah. At the same time, he also looks like the big misfit in terms of skill because he doesn't finish much of anything, and he's really not much in the way of a playmaker.
His offense was extremely streaky during the season as well. There's certainly a case to be made for his defense. That's what you're gambling on. Yeah. And I just... Yes, Nichushkin has absolutely been worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I want him to prove he can be a 30-point player again. I want to see that again before I can definitively say he's more valuable than Mesnikov.
It's tough because it's like, oh, you're talking about a more well-rounded player who can play with your skill and fit in and not have it be kind of an anchor, and a guy who does one thing exceptionally well, but maybe has more limited versatility for you.
Yeah.
Which one's more valuable? For the Avs, specifically for the Avalanche, I would say probably Nichushkin. Because
I don't know if I agree.
They don't really have another guy like that. And when it comes to Namestnikov, they sort of already have, between Compher and Donskoy, they already kind of have that guy.
See, that's the thing, right? This is
kind of.
I'm living in a world where there's a real good chance one of those two guys goes to Seattle,
which we're going to talk about later too.
Later, so we'll get to that in a minute. We do need to take our first period break here, as it's time to acknowledge Breckenridge Brewery. I finished up my beer here at the DNVR bar. You can see some beautiful taps behind me here, as we have 8 different Breck brews on tap down at the DNVR bar. So swing on by and pick it up. Come watch some Denver Nuggets with us over here as they're well into the third quarter at this point. And you can always head down to the farmhouse as well in Littleton to pick up your beer straight from the source. Use code DNVR to get $5 off a meal when you head down to the farmhouse. Second period of the DNVR Avalanche podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. AJ, what you got? You said Namestnikov questions. You said expansion draft questions. I'm sure we got a bunch of others as well.
We do have some others. Kevin wants to know, despite how good they've looked in the bubble, what should be the biggest concern or challenge the Avs have?
In the bubble?
I mean, I'm assuming on ice. Because he says, despite how good they've looked in the bubble. So yeah, okay. they've looked great in 3 games. What are we concerned about moving forward?
I mean, after that Dallas game, it's hard to be concerned about a lot. But
yeah,
I do think staying out of the penalty box is going to continue to be key. We saw that they only took 2 penalties against Dallas, and it helped them a ton compared to the first game against St. Louis, where they took like 8. And it was much more of a slog for them.
Yeah.
Teams, especially a team like Vegas coming up on Saturday that can skate a little bit, you can get yourself caught a little more penchant to take penalties. And look, as strong as the penalty kill has been in the regular season 4 months ago and so far through this bubble, special teams make and break a lot of playoff runs. And yep. You just don't want to put yourself in that situation.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you that special teams consistency. If you could guarantee me that the Avs would go 1-for-5 on the power play every night, I would take it.
Take it every single time, 100%.
Yep. One power play
goal a game is huge.
Yep. I would take that. It's the 0-for-7 or 8 that I'm concerned about.
Yeah. You don't want the big dry spell. That's what you're trying to avoid.
Yeah, and it's the 2-for-5 against you that I'm worried about. Because that's just an uphill battle that you have to climb at even strength. And
I mean, that's kind of the thing, right? If you walk out of every game 1-for-5 on the power play and 1-for-5 on the penalty kill, you go, okay, that's reasonably expectable.
That's to the point where you're saying now we need our even strength to win us games, and that's where the Avs are at their best.
They dominate a 5-on-5.
So let's go with break even on special teams.
That's a
break
good way
even on
it, right?
Break even on special teams, and let your 5v5 decide games for you. If they're able to do that, I think they're in great shape. If they are climbing uphill and they're losing the special teams battle, it's real hard to overcome.
It's just digging a hole you don't need to be digging.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes life that much more difficult for you. So, I would say that would be the concern. Break even on special teams.
Yeah, a great way to put it. The way you said break even, I think is the perfect example. You bet on the Avs 5-on-5. That simple.
We have a couple of questions about the fourth line. Kyra just wants to know thoughts on how the fourth line is doing. Elena wants to know who ends up on the fourth line when the first round actually starts, Josti or Nieto. I figured we can kind of combine these all into.
So I think the fourth line has been very solid, obviously not producing the way they were at times in the regular season, but that's to be expected in the playoffs. Their line, to be honest with you, I would like to see a little bit more out of them on the whole, but you look at both games, and outside of Tyson Joseph-Corsi, I believe in game one, their possession metrics have been fine. If not, against Dallas, they were very good. But
yeah, well, and Jost against St. Louis, they were very bad.
They weren't good, but they weren't like decimated bad. Like Jost was right. Worst on the team at 40%.
Like they were, and I guess exhibition. So if you could write that off. They were atrocious against Minnesota.
I did not count that game at all. To be
which
honest with you,
was whatever. Like however important you want to measure that in the evaluation of this is up to you.
Yep.
For me, they only have three games in the bubble. I think it's of some value, but close to minimal. I think the fourth line's been okay. I'm honestly worried about Belmar. He got blown up. He got obliterated in the faceoff dot. They got him specifically to do that and to be a cog on the fourth line, kill penalties and blah, 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 blah. But he has not played well at even strength. I think he's gotten carried. I think Calvert has been very, very good, and Nieto had a good game. I thought Jost had a great first period, and then it all went downhill from there. Not in a, oh, God, it was terrible from there. It just wasn't – I don't think it was particularly good or bad, but he was really good in the first period, and then it fell off, and that was problematic. And we talked about why that was after that game. I think – I just think it'll be Nieto. I've thought all along it would be Nieto. Jost has the higher upside. Nieto has the more reliable profile.
I think it will be Nieto too. Given that Calvert is Calvert, you know what you're getting out of him. You know he's played very well. I would actually not mind seeing a fourth line of Jost, Belmar, Nieto against Vegas and say, look, whoever plays better earns the job.
What do you mean? Jost, Belmar, Nieto?
That's the line, yeah.
You take Calvert out?
Calvert sitting for the third round robin game because you know he's going to be an automatic in the lineup in the proper playoffs.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you're talking Saturday specifically.
I'm saying Saturday, give these guys a chance to go out and earn the job.
Okay. That's fine. I can live with that. Who do you think actually make your call today? Elena wants to know. Who's your guy? Jost or Nieto?
I think Nieto. We've seen this a million times with Bednar. He's going to lean on the veteran. He's going to lean on the guy he knows what he's getting out of. It's just reality.
I think so too. I also think that they will probably flip-flop during the series, during the first round series. Barring a great game from either one of them, I think if either guy has an okay game where you're like, oh, I didn't notice him, the other guy will go in.
First loss, I would say for sure. We're going to see that switch, barring a great game from the guy in.
Okay. So we agree it's Nieto. We also agree Jost will get in there eventually.
Yep.
All right. Corey Smith asks, so far, what are your surprises? Good and bad of the round robin of qualifying round, any teams or players, not just limited to the Avs.
Sorry, one more time. Our live
comments, all of them just started to work. Yeah. Question was, what are your surprises, good and bad, of the round robin or qualifying round? Anything? Basically, what has stood out, good and bad, to you of what we've seen so far? Doesn't have to be ads related.
I was gonna say, gotta love the 12 seeds, man, coming in here and making a statement.
It has been interesting because those are the two teams everybody agreed were here because they're huge markets and they wanted the eyeballs.
Yep.
And because regular season wise, they had no business being here.
This is quintessential hockey, right? This is why everyone talks about just get in. Anything can happen. Yeah. And the Chicago one, you go, okay, look, we knew Edmonton's defense was bad. We knew their goaltending was a serious question. But to watch Montreal take advantage of Pittsburgh and take the lead in that series blew me away, man.
I think Pittsburgh, MPJ must have done something. I think the thing that's been shocking about Pittsburgh is that it looks like it's the end.
Yeah.
They've been riding. It's been like, hey, we're going to ride Crosby and Malkin. They're going to be our guys. They got, you know, guys like Gensel and Sheary and Rust, and all these guys have been sort of cycling in and out. Hornquist have been kind of coming in to help them over the years. And now it just looks like they finally just reached
the end of the road. Yeah.
They don't have
that next man up, finally. Yeah.
I mean, they got swept last year by the Islanders, and they weren't that competitive. And it was like, okay, well, you know, they add Jason Zucker, right? We got rid of Phil Kessel. He was a problem. Galchenyuk was a disaster, but now we got Jason Zucker, who's a good player. He's a proven player, fits with us, can play with skill, could do everything we need to do. Nothing's working.
They can't.
And at this point, like, if they go out in this round, I don't know how Jim Rutherford does not make a big move.
Was Carey Price one of the worst matchups they could have gotten?
Yeah, sure. Like, look, Carey Price was always – it was always like, look, do you believe in Carey Price or not? Because if you do, this can be a series. But they – regardless of Carey Price, they had a 3-2 lead in the third period. A team of Pittsburgh's caliber and of their expectations, they should be able to put their foot down. Montreal's just not that good. They should be able to just be like, look, this is done. They've got their 3-2 lead. They should be able to keep it.
Please no to this comment.
The NHL is seems to have an agreement with Pittsburgh that they get an insane superstar every generation.
So it would seem. And Lemieux and Crosby is enough. We can reward other teams now.
It's not even like just those guys, but they also got Yager and Malkin at the same time to go with them.
Yeah, the extra pieces they had alongside Crosby, Fleury just thrown in there as well. Why not?
They also had a Jordan Staal who might have been a top flight center in the NHL had he not spent his first 5 years playing third line center job. Like, you don't know what Jordan Staal's career looked like if he goes somewhere else and isn't buried behind those two guys playing a defense role.
Boy.
But anyway, like Pittsburgh is. If they go out in this and they win laugh, it's going to be very frustrating. But that'll be something that we do next week because we are planning to do a mock draft show after the order gets revealed.
The official order, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll have our first, like, actual attempt at this.
We'll have our mad rant about whoever gets laugh. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, right.
Either way, that's a good place to take our second period break. If you didn't check it out, I was on the golf course today, part of the Big Drive Energy. Unfortunately, it came up a little bit short as D-Line Co. took me down on the golf course. Couldn't quite get the job done, but you know what? I'll stick to my WGT Golf Online, where I have a couple of solid finishes in the top five there. You can head on over to dnvrgolf.com to download, and be sure to search for DNVR3 to join our clubhouse. We have tournaments every single weekend, and you can win yourself some awesome stuff by finishing at the top of the list. I got to tell you, it's not easy. you make one mistake in these things and you are not winning. It's that difficult.
So it is unforgiving, as is life. So
sometimes that's the way it goes, man. But again, dnvrgolf.com. You play true to life courses with over 20 million people around the world. Get in while you still can. DNVR 3 is filling up quick. So if you want to be one of the OGs before we have to start DNVR 4, jump on it.
That's right.
All right. Third period of the DNVR Avalanche podcast, answering listener questions. AJ, what you got for me?
Martin Letain, one of our OGs, says, who is one player on the Avs that they might not be able to protect in the expansion draft that you would give up a pick to Seattle not to take?
That is a good question. What is the pick? I mean,
my answer is nobody.
I think I'm with you. Okay.
In a world where
the Avalanche win Stanley Cups.
That's right.
And they've acquired Taylor Hall on a 3-year contract.
Oh, so if but really, if they get Taylor Hall
in a hurry.
If they get Taylor Hall and they round out their top six, you're obviously protecting the big three. You're protecting Taylor Hall. You protect Kadri, you protect Burakovsky. Let's say you protect Nichushkin as 7, whatever.
Okay.
Whoever's the most valuable of Donskoy, Confer, and Jost, do you give up like a 4th to say take the 2nd on that list?
No.
No, even then?
No.
I find it hard to argue with you given that the Avs have Martin Kaut coming, Shane Bowers coming.
That's the thing. They, when we talk about them adding a guy like Taylor Hall, or when we're going to talk about keeping Namestnikov here in a minute, that's the thing. There's Shane Bowers or Martin Kaut are ready to go. Yep. Those are NHL players that, like we've talked about with Timmins, they're not in the NHL, not because they're not NHL caliber players, but because they're on a Stanley Cup. They're in a Stanley Cup contending team that just has very, very few weaknesses right now. There no obvious holes.
Plenty of teams that would play those guys on their 4th line, on their 3rd pairing.
It's just maybe even higher. I mean,
right.
It's just a conversation. And when we talk about protecting from Seattle and giving up a pick, nobody. Every single position that they would have a guy that you would lose, they either have a prospect on the way, or when it comes to goaltender, you're talking about, look, whichever one that you protect is because that guy did enough to separate next season. Yeah. So that in your eyes is your number one goaltender. And then you have to go out and that's you have to fill that role. Maybe that's Adam Werner. Maybe that's a free agent. Maybe in 4 years it's Eustace Annan. We don't know. But
you and 20 other teams are on the carousel of backup goaltenders. This is
exactly
not a big thing. Like,
right. It just isn't. It's just, I mean, look, they went and they got John Bernier. That worked just fine. Then they turned the reins over. Okay. Now they've got Groovy and Varley. Okay. That was fine. Then they went out and they rolled the dice with Frankie. That worked out fine. Whatever they decide to do with that position over the last several years has turned out okay.
And
I'm fine with just trusting them to say, look, we're not in a hurry to lose Groovy or Frankie. We're not looking forward to that, especially Frankie on that contract he's on. We there's value here and we appreciate that. But at the same time, like you just I would say you can handle that loss.
Even the goaltender position, and sure, maybe it's a year or two down the line after the expansion draft, but you have a Eustace Annan sitting in the wings.
Right. Well, and like even in between them, the guy that we don't talk about is Adam Werner, who had a good year in the AHL.
Has an NHL win to his name.
Right, and getting blown out as well.
Yeah, so, well, you know.
You know. It was hey, this guy could be a legit backup for you, and then it was like he's not there yet. Okay, fair enough.
But in 2021, who knows?
Right, there's still a whole season between then of things to happen that still have to be decided. So for me, they're fine. They're in the rare position of they've got guys at all three levels that they could lose, and they're prepared to replace any of them. Staying on the goaltenders, Caleb asks, who's the number one goalie and why is it Frankie?
Okay, well, it's not Frankie, it's Grubb. So let's start there.
Okay.
The reality is it's always been from day one of this season, and it has never changed. It's been Grubb's position to lose. I'm not saying Grubb went out and grabbed it by the horns, but Frankie just has not done enough to take it away from him.
That's the thing. Frankie has done a great job of answering every challenge.
Yep.
But he hasn't overtaken him.
Exactly. It's been 1A, 1B all season long. And it's been close at times, but it never quite pushed the part where it was like, okay, Frankie's the 1A now.
Right. Because when you talk, you know, everybody likes to talk about, oh, Frankie had such a strong finish to the season. You know, if you look at it, he had three of his last five starts. He had under a 900 save percentage.
Yep.
Then he had, you know, two of the five were over 900, well over 900. And then, like, the eight games before that. So if you extend it out, he had a great finish. But at the very, very end, he had kind of come back to earth a little bit. And we're all remembering the back-to-back three stars of the week and the, you know, the accolades and that crazy run. He gave up six goals in eight games or whatever it was. Like, we remember that, but he did come back to earth after that.
It just, to me, that screams typical backup, where they get on a hot streak, and it's not really representative of what you're going to get out of them over a more significant sample size.
And I won't even go that far, but I'll say Grubauer also finished on a crazy hot streak. He just got hurt.
Yeah.
And now that they're both back, they both have been great in the bubble. And so it's like, at this point, I mean, Grubauer is still the number one, but it's you have no problem playing Pavel Francouz.
If one of them has a bad game, you just put the other guy in and you go for it, like, very easy.
Pretty much, man. And then if that guy plays well, he keeps playing. Great. It's that simple.
It really is that simple. Like, top to bottom.
If Grubauer does not play well against Vegas, and I don't know that he's starting, we don't know that yet, but. If Grubauer does not play well against Vegas, Francouz starts in game one of the first round. It's that easy.
Yep. I agree, King David. Bed said it best after the Dallas game. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
It's one that a lot of teams in the league wish they had that problem. So I still think it's Grubb, but no complaints, no matter who starts.
DB Hammer asks, with how Nemestikov seems to be gelling with the team, would you sign him at the expense of another player on the team? And what player?
Sure. I'd sign him if they could make the money work, but I just don't think they can.
The question is really the player that you're signing Nemestikov at the expense of, I think, is probably Martin Kaut.
Yeah, I think that's the reality. And if Nemestikov wants to come back on a contract that is reasonable and makes sense for the Avalanche, I think I do it.
If he would take a 3-year deal at $3.5 million, would you bring Nemestikov back?
Yes. I think $3.5 million is exactly that sweet spot.
Okay. I was, because my follow up question is, where is your line? Because if it was 3.75, are you really going to let him walk over 250K?
I think I'd probably still do it, but 4 million starts to feel bad, right? Like, you're talking about a third line, Donskoy at 3.9, Confer at 3.5, and then Nemestikov at 4. You're paying your third line. Sure, Nemestikov can move up, but that's $12 million.
It's like
11 and a half, whatever.
Yeah, it's somewhere in there.
$11 million on your third line, and then you're still going to have pieces on your fourth line that you're paying that upwards of $6-7 million. That is not how you build a hockey team financially responsibly. It's just not.
And like, at what point do you say, okay, Martin Kaut, like, come take this job?
You have
Martin Kaut, Shane Bowers, and Logan O'Connor all there on cheap contracts, just waiting.
I think the reality of the situation is The Avs made their bed when they gave Donskoy for 4-year deals. And it's hard to get out of that bed. It's just difficult to get out of that bed without some kind of move being involved.
That would be that's where I feel. If you bring Namestnikov back, the player it has to be at the expense of is Donskoy. You have to move him
either out. Donskoy or Confer, I think. Yeah.
And those two guys are not the same.
No, very different looks.
One of them is 28 years old and one of them is not. So for me, that's an easy conversation where it's you move Donskoy for what you got for Soderberg.
And that's the other side of that conversation is it easier to move JT Confer because someone sees a younger player entering their prime type of thing?
The what you don't want to do is move out Donskoy for Namestnikov and then lose Confer to Seattle.
Right.
Then that would suck.
Left and right on that one.
Like, because then you've replaced one with Namestnikov and that's great. And then you protect him, but then you lose Confer and it's just like, I guess then your third line could be Namestnikov, Bowers, and Kout.
It's taken two steps backward to take a step forward.
But that's two different off seasons also. So could be different things. Anyway, I'll move on to the next question just because I think we're headed for an off season show where all we do is talk about Namestnikov.
Every little bit of him down. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Cause that's going to be,
a conversation that we end up sad at the end of, I predict.
Yeah. I've got two questions left. There are more questions that I would have liked to ask. You guys really brought a lot of interesting ones.
We'll log them for next time.
Yeah, but we're at 40 minutes already. So second to last question from Dan. He says, do the Avs replace an assistant coach next season?
I guess you could maybe say it depends on how these playoffs go, but I would say no.
I would say given the pandemic, hi guy. I would say given the pandemic that the coach carousel will be very, very limited this year.
Yeah.
The offseason is like a month,
especially in smaller roles like that, where you're not talking about enticing someone with a head coach job or anything like that.
Yeah. You're shifting assistant coaches around. Those guys need to get in. They need to come in. They need to get with the front office. They need to learn how things work here. They need to bring their ideas. They need to gel. They need to talk with players. They need to have all these conversations. These things take time. I don't think that after this offseason, there's going to be enough time to really make that happen.
I agree. And look, people can complain about the power play all they want. Nothing on this Avalanche team is so egregious that it requires the immediate firing of anyone.
Yeah, it was league average.
Yep.
It's just it was within like a percentage point of being like top 12.
Yeah, I believe it can be better. I believe it should be better, but
totally agree.
It's not high on the list of priorities right now with what the offseason that's going to come.
Yeah, which. Last question of the day, just because somebody almost always asks us this, and I want to drive this home, at least where I stand on this. Vincent asks, if you have to pick between Taylor Hall and Alex Pietrangelo as Joe Sakic, which one do you sign?
Taylor Hall.
Okay. So we agree on this.
The Avs win a championship with Taylor Hall, period. End of story. They will win a Stanley Cup if they go out and get Taylor Hall this offseason. I don't care if it's for 1 year. I don't care if it's for 7 years. They will win a Stanley Cup with that player on this team. I truly believe that.
I think it's a great place to stop.
All right. We will get out of here.
Nowhere for me to go, Ted, because I don't disagree. That's the kind of guy you might get questionable for.
Oh, look at this cool guy, Brandon, back here. Nuggets within two, baby. You guys talking hockey? We're trying. We're trying. Something like hockey.
You said look at this cool guy, and I'm still looking.
Ooh. AJ with the burns. All right. Well, I think it's safe to say Taylor Hall might be our Strava Craft Coffee performer of the day, given that he would win the Avs a cup, and he about to take down Nashville with Arizona. So Strava Craft Coffee is the CBD-infused coffee that has really changed lives. You can get it in any form you like, whether it be K-cups, whole bean, or ground. You name it, they have you covered. And when you sign up for their subscription service, you can get 20% off every single time you buy at StravaCraftCoffee.com. The CBD is non-psychoactive and has been known to help many different aches and pains, as well as even things like anxiety. So give it a shot today if you haven't tried. That's going to do it for this episode of the DNVR Avalanche podcast. I'd like to thank everybody for listening live. Sorry about the comments. I know that was a little bit weird as Adam gets out of here as well. The Nuggets crew's getting hyped. A big fourth quarter coming up. Be sure to go watch that as soon as this podcast ends. Thank you, everybody, for listening. AJ don't care. AJ don't care. He wants a cup. That's all he cares about.
AJ not believing that they're going to come back on Portland.
They're only down two, baby. It's right there. It's right there. But that's a podcast for another time. You can tune in to their Winner's Lounge. I'm calling it. I'm calling the Winner's Lounge for the Nuggets. Have a good rest of your evening. We will talk to y'all with Free Skate Friday tomorrow.